This is the one where the dog is sleepy.
And Bob is thrown off a cliff.
But somehow survives unscathed.
Only to kill a harmless sand beast.
And we get a great upskirt shot of the new girl.
Oh, by the way, there's a new girl.
It's called The Rescue.
Here we go.
We're embarking on a voyage all through time and all through space.
Encountering Daleks, Thalanud, and the Cybertronic race.
Sultarans look like taters and Silurians all have wonky scales.
And the Doctor has a TARDIS, we're reviewing all his tales. Who back when? Reviewing all of who there is. Who back when? Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please. Episode by episode, we're trudging down this temporal road. Come join us on this odyssey, what other choice could there be than
who back when?
Who back when?
Aloha, and welcome to episode 11 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Ponkin.
And I'm the Flaphammer.
Yes, you are.
Oh, yeah.
And today we are reviewing the 11th serial. It's called The Rescue.
Initial feedback?
I hate the new girl.
Yeah, I hate the new girl. I literally just finished watching this, by the way, so my hatred is still fresh.
Good for you.
Like, that doesn't mean I'm unmovable. I mean, she might come around, but to be honest, I like her less than Susan.
I like her less than Susan as well, but we haven't really seen her in action and whatnot. Yeah. We're going to get to that.
We'll get to that. So,
oh my god, 55 seconds
already.
In, Gina's already drunk. So we're going to try something new with this episode. We've received some listener feedback from one listener in particular, Daniela, thank you for listening, who said, basically, for the benefit of all the listeners of Who Back When who haven't seen these classic episodes, we're going to give like a little mini summary, like a blurb, basically, of the serial in question before we launch into our Who Back When WBW review.
And it could be a train wreck, but we will get better at it.
Yeah, Flappy, you've come up with like the most fantastic name for this segment.
Yes, I've decided it might be a nice idea to make this just a tiny little segment called Bite-Sized Chunk of Who.
Bite-Sized Chunk of Who. So...
So as opposed to, you know, our characters and the way we think and live, we're going to try and do this in a really precise, crazy.
Exactly.
Let's alternate from plot point to plot point. Okay. Would you like to go first?
Sure, why not? All right, here we go. Serial 11, The Rescue. The TARDIS materializes on the planet Dido while the Doc is asleep.
And the Doctor's really sad because his granddaughter's gone, which seems to make him really sleepy.
That is very true. Ian and Bob go off for a walk because obviously they need to split up, and when they do, they run into a very scary-looking creature.
And it turns out that a human, nay, an English spaceship, has crashed on the planet a little while ago, leaving only two survivors, Bennett and Dickie.
The troop now needs to help the two survivors get off Dido without being killed by scary alien guy.
And I think that's all we can say without ruining the ending.
Exactly. Now you know what this story is about. I don't know if that helps you in any way, but maybe we'll get better at this. All right, shall we launch into Serial 11?
I think it's about time.
Shit, yes, hombre.
Gagging for it.
Okay, so we start off. Episode 1, this is a two-episode serial, by the way. So, episode 1, called The Powerful Enemy. Mm-hmm. Start off by seeing the TARDIS materializing in what looks like a cave. Immediate cut to a miniature craft spaceship with a gorgeous rotating radar dish on the top. Nice miniature. And then we get another very, very quick cut, like a nice L cut, actually, to the interior of the ship, where soon-to-be replacing Susie, a girl named Vicky, who sports a mini dress.
Has very little legs.
Has a sweet face. I've actually written killer legs, but yeah, they're really...
Oh, she's like Twiggy. She would have been killer legs in the 60s, but...
Okay, fine. Has a sweet face, Twiggy legs. I'm going to go back and change my mind on sweet face later on, by the way. We get to see her telling her colleague, Bennett, that she's picked up like this rescue ship on the radar, essentially. And we find out these two, they crashed, they've been stranded on the planet Dido, and now there's a rescue ship arriving, but it's not due for another 3 days.
69 hours, to be more precise. As you said, Vicky has heard on the scanner a blipping, which has indicated that a ship has come into play.
Precisely.
Bennett won't believe it, but of course we know, as the audience, that it is the Doctor and the TARDIS, etc.
Yeah.
But while talking about the possible rescue mission, Bennett brings up this character called Kikillion.
Kakilian, yeah.
Who sounds absolutely terrifying. The first thing he says is, be careful of Kakilian. If he finds out, he'll kill both of us.
Yeah, he'll pop a cap in both their asses.
Yeah, so, I mean, who the hell is this dude?
It's crazy.
It doesn't take us very long to find out who that guy is.
Yeah, so then Vicky actually calls the rescue ship. That's where we find out they're 69 hours away. This is so freaking weird. The rescue ship, they answer on the radar. They are there to rescue these survivors, mm-hmm. and they couldn't be ruder. Like, the guy who picks up the space phone, he just doesn't want to talk to this girl. He's like, no, seriously, get off the fucking line. I've got more important things to do. I'm in space. I'm wanking. I have no idea what I'm doing. But, like, we will get there in 16 hours. I'll contact you again in 17 hours. But, like, seriously?
Okay.
Until then, like, nothing, please.
If you picked up a space phone and you heard the shrill voice of Vicky on the other end, would you not be a little bit rude?
I don't know, man. I don't know.
And knowing Vicky's character, she has probably been ringing him every 3 hours.
My note here about Vicky, by the way, is, like, this is more or less the first impression we've got of her. And I've just written, she's very panicky. She reminds me of a young Margot Kidder.
Who the fuck is that?
Dude, original Lois Lane.
Oh!
Yeah, who actually had mental issues.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Hmm. Cut my who the fuck is that? Jesus Christ. Indiana Jones.
She in Indiana Jones?
Yeah. She's Indiana Jones' like first ever girlfriend, who he hooks back up with in Indiana Jones 4, the Crystal Skull.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Isn't
that Kidder?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, that freaks me out a little bit, because she had actual mental problems, you know that, right?
Did she really?
Yeah, yeah.
But she made a film like 3 years ago.
What was that?
Crystal Skull. No, Crystal Skull.
Oh, right, of course. Anyway, all right, so.
Whatever.
Turns out the blip on her screen is the TARDIS, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So, in which Ian momentarily struggles to remember Barbara's name. Got a soundbite of that. 4 minutes
past
the instant.
Soundbite.
I believe you're right, Barbara.
Well done, Ian. It's not like you used to work with this woman or have been traveling through space and time with her. Doesn't matter. All right, so turns out they materialized while the doc was asleep.
Yeah.
That is so weird.
Yeah, absolutely. Really strange. And yeah. It gets even weirder. so the doctor wakes up. He's all in a little bit of a tiz, but he starts furiously checking dials and says, oh, we've landed somewhere nice and fine, as he always says. It's nice and fine, nothing else. That's a very bland description. They look out the scanner. It's really dark and rocky.
Rocky, yeah.
They surmise that they're probably underground somewhere.
Yeah.
And then the doctor has a really sort of heartfelt moment where
he calls out for Susan. He calls out for Susan. It's so sad.
Oh, Susan usually works that dial.
Yeah, because he's forgotten that he just abandoned his only granddaughter with one shoe, after robbing her of half of her footwear. Just abandoned her in post-apocalyptic fucking London with some crazy farmer, agricultural slave trader paedophile.
We'll come back to that.
God! I know! Oh my God, I made a note of that as well. It's so good. Okay, oh God, I cannot wait.
Right. But Barb basically operates it how Susan used to. And the doctor commends her.
Yes. He commends her.
But he commends her, but then says, you won't try to do that during transit, will you?
He instructs Barb on how to flip a switch. And then he commends her on impeccable flippage. It is the dumbest thing. But,
anyway,
yeah. Okay,
so they go outside and, yep, it's a cave.
Yeah. Barb says it's entirely different to Earth caves, except obviously in that it's made out of rock and filled with a breathable atmosphere, Barb.
Yeah.
Thanks for paying attention. And the doc recognizes a smell.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, yeah. I didn't make a note of that. He does, yeah.
It's very strange.
Does that ever get picked up on again?
Well, I assume that...
damp?
That mold. But not really.
No.
What is so weird about this is that he recognizes the smell, and I assume that's like... spoiler alert, they're going to get split up, and he's going to basically conduct some experiments to find out where they are.
Yeah.
Which is so dumb, because don't they have like a space-time GPS? Can't he just look on a...
I'd love to know what his experiments are. Like, does he take any rock soil samples?
Yeah, he does.
I don't think he does. I think he pretty much immediately says, oh, I'm going for a nap. He notices this strange smell, and then he's like, oh, shit, I need a nap.
It's ether. That's what he smelled.
Right.
That's why he fell asleep.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Ian basically says, I think it's because he's getting on a bit, but Barb explains that, no, the doctor's actually sad. Sleepiness, first sign, depression.
Oh, right? Actually, yeah, you're right.
And
but wait, wait, wait. I made a note. Ian gives him a rock sample. Ian gives him an ensemble.
Oh, he did, Okay. Yeah. But no, the note I made is Ian and Barbara have a laugh about how Susan's off somewhere milking cows.
I know. I've written the quote. Bob says, if I know anything about Gorilla Dave, he's probably got herd milking cows right now.
And then they crack up.
Bob is on the money. By the way, talking point, what do you mean right now, Bob?
Yeah.
You've been traveling through space for 11 serials. Well, this is your 11th serial. Jesus Christ, surely you must realize
Wait. Have they gone forward? They have gone forward in time.
Do we
they?
Know that?
Yeah, well, let's work it out. The girl, it turns out Vicky left Earth in 2493.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I don't know.
What year were we in London?
2165, possibly. There you go. We don't know if that may have been a 400-year-old calendar that we saw.
That's true. But let's take it for granted that it was like 2164 or 5.
Yeah, by the way, Susan, Barbara, listen. Susan is long gone. She is dead.
She's long dead.
She died in the fields.
She's not even dust anymore. Yeah.
Toiling in the fields, milking cows and, I don't know, sowing bananas. Doesn't matter. Okay.
Sowing bananas?
I don't know.
She's in London, dude. Yeah, the
post-apocalyptic London. Do you not remember? No, it wasn't bananas.
Post-apocalyptic London where bananas grow.
Dude, they had tons of apples. Okay.
So... Okay.
Does not matter. Okay. Bye, they head outside. Bing Bong, cut to the alien of the week. He's hanging out outside the TARDIS. And he basically looks like Edward Scissorhands. He's like Edward Scissorhands meets a porcupine.
Yeah.
he pops up and, like, starts... Sorry, what? They're outside. They, like, leave the cave and they're, like, on this cliff.
Mm.
And they see in the distance the crashed ship that we saw at the start of the episode.
And they recognise a flag that they say, oh, that flag's from home.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't remember
that. Yeah.
Oh,
they recognise the flag. So does that mean the Union Jack...
Has not changed.
Has not changed in 600 years.
You know what? Maybe it's a flag that just says Earth.
Maybe.
And Ian's deductive logic is like, you know what? That's got to be from our place.
When they show you the miniature of the ship in, like, long frame landscape shot, you don't see any flag. So how the fuck did they pick out a flag?
Great eyesight. I don't know.
Yeah.
But not just the spaceship. They also see a city, or rather, like, a bunch of destroyed buildings.
Yeah.
Quite close by. Which makes no sense right now, but which will come into play in a little bit.
Will it?
Yeah, because...
Kinda.
People who haven't seen this yet, cover your ears. Because, like, he blew up the shit, right?
Which shit?
Let's not spoil that for people. All right. So, anyway, Edward Scissorhands, he pops up, interrogates them. Like, where are you from? How many of you are there? Blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And he does find out that, okay, so there is a third person here, the Doc. And he gets Ian to go and fetch Doc.
Mm-hmm.
And then... When Ian is outside, proceeds to chuck Bob off the side of the cliff. I mean, she is clearly dead now, right?
And you also, like, not just do you see her being thrown over the edge of the cliff, you also get that echo, like she's fallen 100 feet.
Yeah, well, she is not alive. Like, she is definitely dead at this point.
But then we quite quickly after that see, like, that a quick alive. Shot of her with a twig on top of her. It's good.
No judgment, by the way, Mr. Alien Face. Spiky face. Mm-hmm. No judgment. He is literally just doing what everyone else is thinking. So, meanwhile, by the way, this is my note. Meanwhile, Doc has examined the rock sample and deduced that he's back on the planet Dido.
My bad.
Looking forward to meeting that friendly people again, he says. Mm-hmm. And the weird thing... Okay, so this is what I was going to say before. This is so weird.
Don't forget, we did miss this out, that the monster has a wrench, which seems to be like, I don't know, the hammer of Thor. Like, it seems to have some supernatural power to it that is never explored.
That's true. Well, we're about to find out what he can do with that wrench. Wait, this wrench, by the way, like, okay, what pimp chalices are to, let's say, cups? This wrench is to wrenches.
It is the world's greatest wrench.
It is the most pimpin' wrench ever. So here's the weird thing about the Doc having gotten them to Dido. They materialized while he was asleep.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't know where they are. But out of the infinity of space and time, they've gone to a place where he's been before.
Yeah.
That he recognizes.
Yeah.
Yeah. why did it materialize? Did he? If he set it on autopilot, then he would know where they are. Yeah.
Yeah.
But they weren't, like, pulled in. In modern Doctor Who, there's often, like, well, not often, but some every now and then, we get an episode where it's, like, we don't know why we've stopped, but we've stopped and there's, like, a beacon or some sort of tractor device.
Well, there's a relevance to...
Exactly, whereas here, the TARDIS has just sort of intuitively decided, oh, I know this place, I'm going
to
stop.
Has it intuitively? I
mean, I'm saying...
It seems like, thus far, the TARDIS just goes to random places.
Yeah, but it goes to random places... Well, it goes to random places the Doctor has sort of input. But this time, he hasn't input anything. He's just, like, gone to sleep, and when he wakes up, they've landed.
Has he sort of input everywhere? I mean, I know, like, he didn't get the chance to input anything when they went back to caveman era.
Mm.
But was he trying to take them to visit the Kubla Khan? Like, were they
No, he was trying to get them to Earth, though.
Yeah, he was
and he did get them to Earth, but the wrong time.
I see. I don't know. Like,
does it not matter.
Seem to be any relevance to
does not thing. Matter. Okay, wow. I need to stop saying that. But anyway, but Ian goes back inside, and before he meets up with the Doc, Mr. Spikyface blows up the cave entrance with his pimp wrench.
Actually, before that, there is quite an important moment.
Oh, really?
The Doctor has, like, a one-minute soliloquy where he says, oh, we're on Dido, which we mentioned, but he also goes, the people of Dido are lovely and peaceful and
super
wouldn't hurt
friendly,
my
yeah.
Yeah, I've been here before. They're lovely. We have nothing to fear.
Mm.
Boom. Explosion.
I thought that was afterwards, because there's an explosion. Ian is, like, he is injured in this explosion. The Doc runs out, gets him out, blah, 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 and Ian then describes the creature that he just saw. And the Doctor actually sort of co-describes it with him. He's like, did he have lots of spikes coming out of his whatever?
That happens on the outside of the TARDIS after the explosion. The Doctor comes out, because there's an explosion.
Yeah.
Ian. He's already had his soliloquy inside the ship, dude.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Oh, like, to himself?
Yes, to
it was
himself.
An actual soliloquy,
yes,
an actual
him.
Monologue.
Yes,
all right.
It was an actual monologue.
All right. Whatever.
So he goes outside, talks to Ian, says he's been there before, and Ian says he heard Barbara scream. Something bad has happened back there. The whole of the roof of the cave has caved in. and Ian says that this is absolutely no accident. There's this bastard monster lurking around.
Yeah, and the Doc kind of doesn't want to believe it. He's like, yeah, but they're so nice. Like, they would never do it. So, what pleasant and sociable organism in nature has ever developed, like, a face made of spikes?
No, it turns out that that's a ceremonial costume.
Yeah, but we don't know that yet! We don't know that. Also, like, why would he say that? Why would he say, like, oh, wait, did he look like he had lots of spikes? Why didn't he go, like, why is he not, like, a blonde dude in a leisure suit?
That's true. In a white leisure suit. Because the Doctor knows a lot about this culture, so why would he immediately assume that the guy would be dressed up in ceremonial stuff?
Yeah, the judgment
Although,
suit.
Although, no, actually, it can make sense, because Ian's, like, saying, I saw a monster who talks. So he's like, oh, why would they look like a monster? Because they're dressed up in the crazy ceremonial getup.
QED Flappy.
Yeah,
nice.
QED.
So then Ian describes this bejeweled club, and the Doc remembers this spanner-esque type thing, and says it was a construction tool they were working on when he last visited.
Yeah.
And, yeah, cool, it's a Kablamo spanner. Since Ian says these people are dangerous, mind you, even though he's only encountered one of them so far, the Doc believes him. What if it had been Barb and Susie?
What do you mean?
Or Barb or Susie.
Oh, yeah. Fuck no. He'd have never believed Susie.
No, he would have thought...
I think he might have believed Barb. He is, like, Barb is gaining a bit of credit in the Doctor's eyes, I think. He would have never believed Susie. He'd have said it was the wind.
Yeah.
I saw a weird spiky monster. No, you didn't.
No,
it was a cactus. You fucking retard.
You're making things up, girl.
But I think maybe, like, the relationship between the Doctor and Susan became so ridiculous. Like, he could not believe a word she said. They had to get rid of her. Because she wasn't acting like a normal person. Like, as we'll see.
She wasn't in the last episode.
When he meets up with Vicky, like, they've got a very different relationship.
Yeah.
It's very different.
Yes, it is. It is very different. All right, so, dude, let's move on. Back in the spaceship, Vicky Longlegs is scrambling to look normal.
I've got short skirt Vicky.
I've got a billion different names for her. It's scrambling to look normal when Edward Scissorhands gets back, and he's like the third party who wasn't to know about the rescue mission. Like, we understand that guy is Coquillion, or Coquillion, whatever his name. He's basically the flatbed everyone wishes would just move out. And at first, he admonishes her for having walked outside the spaceship.
Yeah.
Like, he probably sees tracks or something outside. Like, how dare you leave the spaceship? She heard the explosion from before, so she asks him about it, and he says, tells her this fable about how the newly arrived spacemen wanted to pillage the spaceship, and that he couldn't protect them from the rest of his people.
Yeah.
Like he does Vicky No Pants. Yeah. Which is so weird. So weird. But, okay, fuck it.
Well, he's made up a little story. I mean, I am your only protection. Like, that's how he's holding them there. Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. You're right. Sorry, I was gonna go ahead there. But, alright, go for it.
But he says the troop, like a warlike people, remember, you both owe your lives to me, is what he says. But
then Vicky Plainface shouts at him, like, you probably never gave them a chance. Whereupon he raises his Kablamo spanner like a wife beater. And like a deluded person who's been beaten by her spouse, Vicky, no spine, goes, oh, but Daggerface has his reasons, I'm sure. It's all good. Totes.
I don't think she likes him very much.
No, she doesn't like him.
She's afraid of his club.
But, like,
I'm not even sure she buys his story.
Okay, no, this is
we
this
don't
is
even
what
hear
I,
that she does buy his story. She
no, this is what I was. This is what I meant a moment ago when I said, like, oh, it's so fucking weird. Because one second he says, "I'm here to protect you," and literally 5 seconds later, he lifts up a thing that can blow up a mountain and threatens to bludgeon her with it.
Yeah.
It's so weird. All right.
And also, Bennett's position doesn't make that much sense. We won't spoil it. Well, we kind of just did. But Bennett's position is like be afraid of him. Like, he's a scary guy.
Yeah.
Better do what he says.
There's one thing we missed. Vicky did go outside, because we get a tiny little shot of Barbara on the ground and a shadow looming over her.
Yeah.
And if you think maybe, okay, she's dead, Coquillion's turned up and he's like a necrophile, no dice, because that shadow turns out that was Vicky Plainface.
And he's actually hidden Barb inside of the ship.
She has, yes.
Yeah.
So then Mr. Probably has knives for balls. He goes to have a chat room with Bennett. And meanwhile, Vicky then like just lifts up this top or whatever under which lies Barb. So, we get it. She rescued her.
And Vicky gives Barb the whole story, well, for our benefit.
Well, first she teaches her how to spell her name with two eyes. It's like, Vicky.
Was it with two eyes?
Yeah. Like, no, it's V-I-C-K-I.
V-I-C-K-I. And she's like, is that short for Victorian? No. I spell it literally in a, like, American 80s movie kind of way. And you must respect that.
Why is her name not Bridget?
It's Vicky.
Okay, so she does tell her the whole story. Do you want to do the story?
I preceded it very quickly, but basically Vicky's story is that they arrived, they made contact with the people initially, but then they were attacked somehow. There was a welcoming banquet, but then there was an explosion, and the whole crew was killed.
Yeah, the whole crew except Bennett and Vicky. And what we neglected to mention before was Bennett has kind of a limp. Like, he doesn't really walk properly anymore.
Yeah.
And so presumably he was injured during this explosion.
And Vicky has absolutely no idea and no answer to why Coquillion doesn't just kill her.
Yeah.
I don't really have an answer as to why he doesn't just kill her.
Not at all.
Like, given hindsight, he should have just bludgeoned her to death. Anyway.
We've got two screenshots that are going on the website very, very soon.
Oh, yeah.
In quick succession. Number one is, 19 minutes in, Barb's hair has grown beyond belief. We thought Susan looked like a chia pet sometimes. Barb has hair the size of Mount Everest. It is, like, trying desperately to just get away from her face.
It's an absolute
wonder. It is everywhere.
It's a wonder she can keep her balance. Like, seriously, that's maybe why she fell off the cliff.
I think it's like, exactly. It's like, it's a sail. She's basically, like, windsurfed off the cliff.
Yeah.
So then, anyway, cut back to the caves. Doc is explaining how the Dido humanoids... We don't get that name. I got that off...
We don't get anything. I've got Didoans.
Didoans. I just found Dido humanoids on, I think, the TARDIS Wikia. He explains how the Dido humanoids, all 100 of them, there were literally only 100 of them, were a peace-loving race. That's all we get to know. We already knew they were peace-loving, but now we also know there were 100 of them. Yeah. On a whole planet!
Yeah.
100. God, the level of incest.
You don't know how big the planet is. Maybe it's tiny.
So it's a moon?
Like, maybe it's the size of the junkyard. I don't know.
Maybe.
Maybe. I don't know.
All right. So then cut back to the spaceship for screenshot number two.
My note here, I'll read it word for word. We see Vicky's, underlined twice, full ass when she bends over. It's just everything. And when she first came on screen, I was saying to her, I was just like, wow, that's a really short skirt. Then she bent over.
Then she bent over. We actually see her. My note is, it turns out Vicky does wear pants after all.
Yes.
She treats us to an upskirt shot in the kitchen while loudly talking to Bob, even though Kakrillian is in the adjacent room.
But this is pretty much our first impression of her, right?
And it's, okay.
Like, how to introduce Vicky as a character. I know. Like, let's have her bending over with her ass directly to camera.
Well, I think, people, don't laugh. I have two things to say, and I think they are of relevance here. Number one is 1964 censorship. She's, we haven't seen people's upskirt shots before.
I don't know. Like, upskirt shots were becoming quite popular in the 60s, actually. Like,
Late 60s, early 70s.
Yeah.
But this is also a kid's show. This is a family, this is a show for children. And we've got, some little piece of tasty muffin in there just as a treat to, the dads watching this with their kids. It's so weird.
If you watch South American children's TV...
We have at least two listeners in South America right now.
They'll be able to cooperate. There is lots of, sexual stuff going on.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen South American TV.
Women with tassels presenting shows, dancing around with children.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hot.
Yeah. Okay. It really is.
All right. So I was going to make two points.
They're a lot better looking than Vicky.
All right. Well, I was going to make two points. Point one is the censorship issue. Like, I'm not sure what censorship was back then.
Yeah,
even though in the last episode, by the way, in going through it, Susie isn't the only one who says shut up. The doctor says shut up. Pretty cool.
I don't think there's anything wrong with saying shut up.
Yeah, but he's never done it before. That's my point. Like, it's a bit of a change. So, that's numero uno. Point dos is Susie was a child. She was meant to be a child. She was actually 24, 25, something like that. But she was meant to be a child.
Agreed.
And people probably just, in an effort to distance themselves, as in for the show to distance itself from having a companion who's just a kid, they throw in someone who is at least meant to be sexy.
Absolutely agree. I think Susan and Vicky, in real life, they're about the same age.
Probably,
but you're allowed to want to have sex with Vicky.
Yeah.
Because she's meant to be, I don't know, they don't say, but she's probably meant to be 22. So it's fine. They've made a little shift. It wasn't okay to want to bang Susan. It wasn't. She was 16, and she was somebody's granddaughter. It was too creepy.
Okay. In Invasion of the... Dalek Invasion of Earth, knowing that she was 25, hand to God, Flappy. Would you or wouldn't you?
My mum listens to this. No.
Hello, Mother Flappy.
No. I'm not answering that. But what I will say is I felt very conflicted with Susan. Like, the whole thing was quite conflicting.
Okay.
I didn't want to want Susan. It was too weird. It weirded me out. Because I know the actress was 20, but she was playing a child.
Dude, she was mid-20s.
I don't know.
But you're cracking ass. Okay, does not matter. So I think you're right, though. This is the character that you're allowed to watch.
But I will also say, I think Susan's better looking than Vicky.
Oh, much better looking.
I think Susan's better looking than Vicky. But it's not okay to like Susan, it's okay to like Vicky.
Sure.
Which is the point you were coming to, which I agree with.
Yeah, all right. Fine. Let's get back on track. Vicky explains that Kakrillian rescued them and whatever. And she's also said that he is the only Dido they ever see.
Yeah.
But she does think that they live nearby. Now, people of podcast land, do you remember we mentioned that there was a city that was in complete rubbles? Just nearby? That's where they supposedly live, right? That city is bombed to shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they can't get over there. That's why Kakrillian says you're not allowed more than 50 yards away from the ship.
Yeah,
she doesn't want them. Actually, Kakrillian...
We're not going to get to that. Anyway, we also don't know what Kakrillian is discussing with Bennett, by the way. We don't know. But there is already an air of suspicion. This episode of Who Back When is all over the place. Doesn't matter. This episode, the serial sucks balls.
Yeah.
So it's fine.
You have to cut this together. Anyway, we cut to the Doctor and Ian, who are stumbling around in the dark and apparently edging across a ledge.
No, we get something else first.
What?
Bennett arrives. Yeah, because Vicky, who clearly suffers from some sort of psychological imbalance, she starts yelling.
Sorry.
Even though Kakilian is just right next door, she starts yelling, then she hears someone approaching, hides Barb under the tarp again, and it turns out it's Bennett, who didn't reveal anything to Edward Scissorhands, he says, about the rescue ship.
He's been being interrogated for, like, an hour.
Yeah, or whatever. And then Vicky shows him Barb, and he eyeballs her in a way that may or may not insinuate an intention to eat her. Like, he looks really, really just dastardly.
There's something up with Bennett. Yeah. There's obviously something up.
By the way, here, spoiler alert for people, like, just try to piece this together for yourselves. We don't get to find out what happened to Kakilian. He went to talk to Bennett. All of a sudden, Bennett arrives.
Yeah.
But we don't
see Kakilian leave.
Exactly.
Which will add up.
Will add up.
But why does it not already add up to Vicky?
Because she's mental.
But why is Vicky's question, why the ship did Kakilian not leave? How did Kakilian leave? He's been interrogating you. Is he still in there? Like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're talking about a girl who would, like, scream when she's trying to hide someone. Fuck it. Doesn't matter. Back in the cave. Go for it, dude. Doc and Ian.
They're stumbling around in the dark, and they seem to be walking along a ledge until they get the torch out. And then they look down, and they see... They see this amazing creature. And it's amazing in many, many ways.
It's fantastic.
Like, it's obviously a guy in a suit, like, who's been strapped to the floor.
Yeah.
And, like, have you ever seen that film Human Caterpillar?
Human centipede?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
It's kind of moving around like the human centipede does.
It reminded me a lot of the Inside Out dog in The Fly 2.
Oh, yeah, yeah, good.
Very much so.
Yeah.
But
basically, it can't really move. It can, like, sort of...
It like has no legs. It looks like a dachshund and a rhino did a bukkake on a mermaid. that's my note about it.
But they see this creature, and Ian says, "Oh, like it looks like it's come from the outside. It's got like green eyes."
Yeah.
To which the doctor says, and I think we need a soundbite here.
Okay.
Oh, very good. Yes, very intelligent reasoning. So good, I might have said the same thing myself.
Very nice, Doc.
Very nice. Little ego strike, love them.
Yeah.
But then the doctor pulls on a chain.
Yeah, they find these handles in the cave wall.
Yeah, and Indiana Jones style.
Very much so.
Swords or pokers start coming out of the wall.
Yeah. Trapping Ian.
Yeah.
Like he's trapped between these two sets of spikes.
Although the pokers are so wide that it'd be quite easy for him to like wriggle in between them. And also they're not coming from both sides.
Oh.
Like on one side it's like clear open space. So there's no way he's in danger, in fact.
No.
No.
No, no, no. There is absolutely no problem. And then like a third set of spikes turns up in the middle between the two sets.
Yeah.
Edging him towards the cliff edge. Yet again, literal cliffhanger.
Dun, dun, dun!
Episode 2!
Desperate Measures. It's getting God. Desperate.
Oh, I'm desperate. The title must refer to the ass shot in episode 1, by the way. So...
Yeah. So the trap stops.
Yeah, Ian evades the laziest booby trap ever.
And we get so many different shots of the beast from so many angles, making so many different noises.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then cut back to the rocket ship where Big Hair and Upskirt are trying to convince a collapsed Bennett to set a trap for Edward Scissorhands. It's true.
And
that's what happens.
And, yeah, the way you speak is ridiculous. And in what seems like a foreshadowing, well, I say foreshadowing, it's like a parallel between the way the Doctor speaks to Susan.
Exactly the nod I've made.
How speaks to Vicky.
Exactly the nod I've made.
Sound bites.
You're just a child, you don't know what you're talking about.
This is so all over the place, it's ridiculous.
So then we get lots of, like, quick cuts again. This is so shit. So anyway,
true.
Lots of cuts. First, quick cutscene of Doc and Ian having disabled the booby trap by, like, replacing the handle. And then the rhino Dachshund Bukkake monster peering out into the light. Cut two in the light. Upskirt is wandering around, like, seemingly oblivious to the Bukkake monster next to her. Cut two, Barb making a note of where Upskirt's flare gun is. Cut two, Doc and Ian finding door. Doc says, like, they find this door in the wall, can't open it, and the doc says, let's continue, as long as no one creeps up behind us. Will this pan out, by the way?
Never.
No! And then cut back to Upskirt outside the spaceship. You need to describe this scene, Flaphammer.
Well, Basically, Bob just comes out of the ship and fires the flare gun directly at the monster.
Even though
it moves at half a mile an hour.
And Vicky Longlegs, Vicky Asscrack, is screaming like, no, don't shoot Sandy.
So she calls the beast Sandy. It's like a pet she's been giving feed to. Barb's a complete lunatic with a gun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's killed her little pet.
With a flare gun.
Yeah.
And it dies in freaking agony. Like, it screams in anguish so loudly that even Ian and Doc, who are inside the cave, can hear its cries of woe.
It did make you want to call the RSPCA. It was horrifying.
And Upskirt weeps as well.
Yeah.
Mr. Bukkake, it turns out, was her only friend.
Mm-hmm.
She'd even... Yeah, like, did you say this? She trained him to only eat plants.
I didn't, yeah. But yeah.
In the very limited time she spent on Dido, she has trained this Bukkake monster to become a vegetarian. Bukkake must have been a very fast learner. That's, by the way, diminishing any true sense of accomplishment on the part of Upskirt.
Anyway, the doctor's first words to Vicky, more or less, you look a bit of a mess.
I'm sorry to cut you off again. I'm really, really sorry. I've cut you off so many times enough. Can I just make a note here? Mention something. I made a note of Barbara. Like, Barbara being completely without value or merit as a human being has not only brutally murdered this poor girl's best friend in the world and a clearly very intelligent creature, but also one might assume...
Why is it very intelligent? Because it's been trained.
Yeah, it's a fast learner.
Right.
But also one might assume both wasted a flare and alerted Kakilian.
Yeah.
That's fucking dumb.
Or, we don't know yet, could be the rest of the race who are meant to be murderous,
exactly.
The angry people.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, she doesn't run up to Sandy and, like, suffocate her with a pillow. She literally fires a flare, the kind of device that is designed to attract attention. She uses that to murder this poor animal.
To be fair, she panics. Like, if you'd seen that, like, what would you have thought?
Yeah,
like,
guess.
Why is that guy dressed up that way? Would probably be your first question. But yeah, it must be a pretty serious gimp. Yeah, so pretty much Doctor and Ian arrive at the spaceship straight away afterwards. Doctor tells Vicky that she looks a bit of a mess, but they do seem to get on very well, and the Doctor's trying to talk Vicky down, who's so pissed off with Barb for killing her only friend, but telling Vicky that they're not going to jeopardise anything, if they're being picked up by a rescue ship, it's all going to be fine. Because Vicky's really upset that her escape plan is being destroyed.
Yeah,
she's been waiting for the ship for ages.
Later on she even says, like, everything was better before you guys arrived.
Yeah, and she's been waiting 69 hours.
Yeah, but first they sit down at the
kitchen
table.
But she does completely forget about them in the end.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, but the Doctor has softly taken her to one side, basically puts an arm around her. Come sit next to me, child.
Keep that thought on the tip of your tongue, because first they sit down at the kitchen table, she's, like, clearly told them everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Ian is sitting there, like, brandishing the flare gun, and he tells her, I think we need a soundbite. Soundbite!
Cheer up, Vicky. And don't forget, if old Cocky Licking comes round, I've always got this.
Old Cocky Licking? Who?
I don't remember.
He calls Kakilian Old Cocky Licking. It was fantastic.
I don't remember it at all, gotta be honest.
Okay, well...
I hardly remember Ian in this little segment. In fact, Ian, again, has a very small part in this.
Oh, minuscule.
He's just not even there.
Yeah.
He's just being...
In fact, Bai then exits stage left to go do Lord knows what. And then Doc puts on, like, his charm.
Yeah.
And actually sort of affects a different voice. I think his real voice, like, that's his actual human person voice as opposed to his character voice.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Like, apparently William Hartnell was a lovely old fella.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And he convinces her to take him to Bennett.
Yeah, he, like, takes her down to one side, like, says, oh, come sit round the table with me, child. Puts
Upskirt looks up at him with doughy fuck me eyes. Takes his hand.
It's not fuck me eyes, dude. Like, it's obviously a surrogate.
I'm really sorry, Jack's mum.
It's obviously... No, but you've got it wrong. It's obviously a surrogate situation.
I know.
He's crying out for a granddaughter.
I know.
She's just lost her father.
I know. I just wanted to say this.
She's just lost, like, we didn't mention that. Kakilian or someone has killed her father. Her father's gone.
Yeah.
So she's looking for, like, a new male role model. Mm. It fits completely, dude. But the doc wants to speak to Bennett.
Yeah.
He's desperate to speak to Bennett. You know, he's talked Vicky around to his way of thinking, and he's just gone over. The door's locked. He hears Bennett say...
don't come in or something.
Yeah,
you can't come in.
Don't come in. Struggles to get in. Mm. Cut back to Ian and Barb talking to Vicky, and now we get the first real bit of backstory on where Vicky's from, what's going on. Vicky explains that she left Earth in 2493.
63, I've written. Is it 93? Maybe 93.
No, 2493. And Ian and Barb explained they left in 1963.
Yeah, not just that, by the way. They go like, when did you leave Earth? And she goes, 2463, of course. Why of course? Have you read the ship's manifesto? Do you know what your itinerary is? Why of course, Vicky Longlegs? God.
Well, why would it be precisely that year? True.
Well, how are they to know the finer details of their mission?
Like, so if, yeah, 2493, she thinks she's left. Why would it have definitely been that year? Why couldn't it have been 2495?
Sure, like, exactly.
But Ian and Barb explained they left in 1963. She doesn't understand and just assumes that Barbara is 500 years old, and we get, like, a funny little moment, like where Ian's laughing at how terrible Barb looks.
Yeah.
Because, as you said, her hair has grown, like, tenfold
exponentially.
In this episode.
She hasn't cut her hair since they left London.
She is an absolute
the first
mess.
Time around.
Like, she is a complete mess. So there's a lot of pointing and laughing going on. Yeah. But it's quite light. It's quite refreshing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then cut back to Bennett's door.
Yeah, the Doctor has broken in anyway.
With his galactic diplomacy. He's ramboing the door that Bennett has respectfully asked him not to open with, like, part of the fuselage.
Like, I don't know what he was expecting to do if Bennett had been in there.
Well, one would assume that Bennett is pounding one off in there, just wants privacy.
Just a minute. But he breaks in anyway and finds a tape recorder inside and presses play, and it goes, "You can't come in," which is what Bennett's been saying.
Exactly.
First thing that occurred to me, it's like, wait, who's pressing that?
Exactly. That's exactly my notes. That's exactly my notes. Who's been pressing it?
Yeah. Like, is that a bit of string on the door or something? Like, every time you try and open the door handle, it pushes play. To me, it looks like a typical 60s tape recorder.
Yeah.
But that's just me.
Does it also automatically rewind?
And then the Doctor starts listening in to the conversation that's going on next door between Vicky,
Ian and Barbara.
Ian and Barbara.
Henceforth referred to as VIB.
And Vicky's just going, "Oh, the Doc is so amazing. Like, he's the sweetest man on earth." And he's just nodding.
She's a sweet girl.
And then the Doctor spies in the middle of the floor a trapdoor.
Why is there a trapdoor in the spaceship?
Okay, so it does make sense for the story that that's a way to get out. But
why would they have a trapdoor in the floor of a spaceship
in the first place? Why would they have installed one? Like, presumably that gets you outside. So what? That just leads out into space when the spaceship's in flight. You press a button, it just opens you out into space. What? So Ian tries to follow the Doctor in there, and they all come into an empty room, and the Doctor is gone.
Yeah.
Without saying a word. He's so close that he can actually hear the conversation next door.
Yeah, he could clearly just go, "Hey, dudes, I found a trapdoor. Check this out. We're going to go this way." He doesn't. But he does take the trapdoor. He's now back in the tunnels, and he finds the door that they couldn't open before, or some similar door anyway. And he opens it, and beyond it, he finds what looks like a Masonic break room.
I had Aztec tomb.
Nice.
Yeah.
And a chest of robes. Chest with robes.
Yeah.
By decide the Doc is probably making a break for the TARDIS. Cut back to the Doc. This is basically the end of the episode.
Before cutting back to the Doc, we get a little snippet of Barb going, "He wouldn't go off without telling us." Which
is
my
God.
Dumbest fucking
comment. Have you even been paying attention, Barb?
Have you even been around for the last 11 episodes?
Serial, dude. Serial.
Serial.
The last, 40 episodes?
Yeah, exactly. Like, from the moment you met this guy, he won't tell you anything.
God. All right, so anyway, cut back to the Doc.
Yeah, and the Doctor has found Caecilion.
Yeah, he calls out for, like, whomever. He's like, "Hey, you can come out now," or something.
Wanting to talk to you.
Yeah, then Caecilion turns up, full regalia, and Doc says that they're in the old Chamber of Judgment, so it's very sort of fitting that they meet there. And then he Scooby-Doos old Cocky Licky. Like, he just gets Cocky Licky to take off his spiky Edward Scissorhands face mask.
Well, no, he does, like, tell him that he's found him out. May I remind you that masks and robes are only used for ceremonial occasions.
Okay, yes, fair enough.
And then,
surprise, surprise.
No,
who is it?
It says Bennett.
Bennett?
Yeah, so the jig's up. Bennett takes the mask off.
Yeah. If anyone had not figured this out by now, please, please just ransack your character because well, there's something.
Stop watching stuff. Like, I dread to think, if you haven't worked that out by now, I dread to think what would happen if you watched, say, LA Confidential.
Yeah, look out the window and expect to be surprised whatever's out there. There is literally, there are three characters in this entire drama before the Doc, Ian and Barbara arrive.
It's absurd.
Three characters, one of whom is clearly a fake. It's not Vicky. Who could it be? So then anyway, yeah, Bennett reveals that he's in fact a murderer. Like, he killed a man aboard the spaceship.
It's incredibly elaborate.
Yeah. Like,
it's unnecessarily elaborate.
I can't
elaborate.
Think of which story...
He could have just killed the girl, but instead... So he killed, as you said, killed someone out in space. So he had to kill the rest of the crew because they all saw him kill this person want them to radio back to Earth.
Yeah, well, they did crash. Like, actually crash, right? Or did he arrange the crash?
I thought he arranged the
crash. Oh, maybe he did.
I thought he killed the rest of the crew. Maybe as a result of killing the crew. Yeah. They all crashed.
Then when there was the welcoming banquet, he arranged the explosion there, killing not just his crew, but the entire Dido race.
Yeah. And then he dressed up as Caecilian
to evade arrest, basically.
Well, and to show Vicky how horrible the people of Dido were.
Yeah, so that she would testify against Caecilian and the Didos, and, like, assume that the guy that he murdered on the spaceship was actually murdered by the Didos.
So, hold on. He went through this whole costume drama to convince Vicky of that, but he didn't mind killing every single other member of the crew and the whole race of the Didoans just so he could put on this little masquerade for
Vicky. He's a bad guy, and he's also into role-playing, heavily.
What? Well, he's killed, like, from what it sounds like, he's killed, like, 200 people.
Yeah, well,
he keeps Vicky alive.
The only reasonable explanation is that the entire crew of the spaceship knew that he was guilty.
Yes.
Except Vicky.
But still,
they allowed him to roam freely and build a bomb.
What, so he's got a conscience?
He wasn't in a cell or something. Like, they crashed, they go to a fucking party, and he blows up the party. They're like, oh, we're going to go to a party because you murdered someone, you're not invited, but, like, here's our TNT supply.
But my point is, he's got a conscience about Vicky only.
No, he has no conscience about her. He wants her to testify...
Why has he just killed her, then?
No, because he needs her to testify against everyone.
Really?
Yeah. Like, he...
Is that your theory?
No, he says this. I'm pretty sure he says this. Like, he wants her to testify against the Didos so that there's no suspicion on his part. Like, why did everyone die? Everyone had to die because they knew he was a killer in the first place. And then how does he prove that he didn't kill them? Oh, because Vicky says that it was the Didos because they're really evil.
Okay, I'll go with that.
I think that's what it is.
But it seems needlessly elaborate.
Yeah, mid-soliloquy, by the way, he places his Kablamo wrench on the table and turns his back on it.
Yeah.
So, obviously, the Doc is going to pick it up.
Yeah, and the Doc tries to attack him. It's actually a pretty violent scene.
Yeah. Oh, my God, I thought...
Like, it was actual throwing
I thought Hartnell was out of shape.
No.
I don't think that's a stunt double, by the way.
He looked quite refreshed in this episode.
I think so as well, yeah.
He looked quite young and virile.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I don't know if I'd go that far, but, like, he definitely looks refreshed. And so he gets knocked to the ground, at which point, drink Gina, two Didos, who turns out look like pudgy white guys in tracksuits, turn up. Force Bennett over a ledge.
No, they don't. That's meant to be what happens. What actually happens is they turn up, approach him extremely slowly.
Yeah.
Bennett, to this, his reaction is he picks up a chair, throws it completely in the opposite direction of the two Didoans, and then backs up of his own accord and walks off the edge of a cliff.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. My note here, by the way,
hilarious.
My note here is, are they ghosts? What? I think they might be ghosts, dude. I think they might be spirits of Didos.
No, he does say, like, when they come, he says, oh, I thought I killed all of you. But it's true, they could be ghosts. The Doctor never acknowledges their presence.
Well,
he's meant to be great friends of these people, and he never acknowledges their presence.
I'm sure he sees them.
Well, he's on the floor.
I figure they're, like, avenging spirits or something, who later on, it turns out, can sabotage radar equipment.
I think they're just Didoans he's missed.
Okay, fine.
But there you go.
So, the whole Dido race now consists of, as far as we know, two white dudes in tracksuits. That's the Dido race.
There could be more.
Could be more. Cut 2 wakes up in TARDIS.
Yeah.
The Doctor wakes up.
What a short little story.
Yeah, he tells Bi all about Bennett, but then cuts himself short and says, where's Upskirt? I want a word with that girl. Or with that child.
Yeah, and of course, everybody's in agreement. We need to take Vicky along. They convince Vicky to come.
Invites her to join them, and exactly, like, they're all in agreement. But
he says a really creepy line. Well, it sounded creepy to me at the time. Do you like adventure, dear? I can promise you an abundance of it.
Oh, my God. That's what I'm saying. He's, like, he's the creepy uncle. He's not the grandfather. He's the creepy uncle.
Like, he obviously is the grandfather. Like,
I know, dude. But, like, I'm sure at Christmas time she's going to be sitting in his lap, if you know what I mean. So, whatever. She accepts their invitation. We get that whole, like, oh, but it's bigger on the inside type moment. Even though she doesn't really say that, but it's kind of...
So whatever. She agrees, and I've made a note, she is the first voluntary member of the crew.
Who isn't directly related to the Doctor.
I'm not sure. Susan didn't seem voluntary. She seemed like she was being dragged around.
Oh, that's true. Well, she did want to tag along
afterwards. I guess, technically speaking, the Doctor is the first voluntary member.
Yeah.
the first voluntary human member.
Oh, God.
Then, like, to finish it all off, the two Dido men come along and destroy the radio controls of the ship. Like, the rescue ship, which has been completely forgotten about, like, saying, we're approaching, like, is anyone there?
And, now they want to talk.
Well, and they're the...
And they rip the shit out of the radio.
Why?
Yeah, why? I'm thinking they're poltergeists. If they're alive, they would just pick up the radio and go, are you guys from Earth? One of your people just ruined everything for us.
Yeah, we don't like you guys, so please turn around. Do the Didoans speak? They spoke to the Doctor the last time he visited, apparently. But there you go. They destroy the radio controls, so there's that little story ended.
Yeah.
The TARDIS flies off and then lands, literally again, on a cliff edge. TARDIS starts falling. Pan to inside. Everybody starts falling. Dun, dun, dun. End of episode. Cliffhanger. It's not even a cliffhanger. It's a cliffhanger offer.
I gotta say two things. Mm. Number one, the version I saw didn't end with that.
Really?
Yeah. Spoiler alert. I've seen the beginning of the next episode and it starts with that. But the version I saw didn't end with that.
Okay.
So that's number one. Number two, there's a tiny little bit of an exchange between Doc and Ian. Because, let's see here. The Doc explains that the Dido now have their planet to themselves and that they probably won't let the rescue ship land. So we just saw them ruin the radio, even though they're dead. And then Ian says, yes, but that wasn't the reason you brought Vicky along, was it? And the Doctor agrees. And although I'm sure it's meant as a reference to him missing Susie, it really comes out a bit as two grown men perving over jailbaits. Like, Ian might as well have said, yeah, but you want a slice of that pie, don't you? It's so weird. The version I saw anyway ends with that, and it's really creepy.
To me, like, the purpose of these two shitty little episodes were just to establish the relationship between the Doctor and Vicky.
Oh, which, definitely. Well, it's to introduce her.
Which is loving paternal love.
Yes. I'm sorry. He's not a paedophile. That's obviously not the case. I love the Doctor.
More than that, the Doctor is an asexual being. Or at least he was until, like, 2005.
Exactly.
He's up until 1989 now, he is a completely asexual being. Like, the writers always try and keep him away from
sex. Do we know that for certain? I don't know that.
Well,
maybe Peter Davison has a little bit of a flirt.
Well,
who knows?
Like, I read a little thing, with some of the writers of Doctor Who, where they were saying, like, literally, they, like, one of the reasons they got rid of Susan, because they didn't want to remind people the Doctor might have actually had sex. The Doctor might have actually, like, fathered someone.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like, they want to keep him completely removed from sexual stuff.
Okay.
Which I think is going to continue until Christopher Eccleston.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nice. All right.
When it gets hot and heavy. Anyway, we're done with this now. Episode. We're so done.
Mini reviews.
It's us first.
It's you first.
Is it me first?
I think it's you first. I think I did the first one last time.
Okay, so in summary. what I'd like to say... It's not a real episode. It's not a real story. It's not a real serial. It is literally...
It's fluff.
It's a gateway. Like, this is a gateway piece. It feels harsh... Like, it feels harsh to judge it that badly, because, like, it's just there to do a job.
Yeah, but...
It's not there to entertain.
Sure.
It's there as a segue.
Sure, bear that in mind, but please do be as harsh as you want to in your review.
Okay. So I think the analogy I used earlier was... Okay, all the pieces tied together, all the strings tied together, but there were, like, three strings. Like, and a child can tie its shoelaces. Like, it's... It's not that difficult. yeah, there was just nothing to it. There was absolutely nothing happened. I mean, the little story, the little backstory that goes on, like how we meet Vicky, what this Kykillian guy is doing, it's so see-through, it's so short, there's just nothing in it. So
that's what she said.
It's hard to really give it a negative mark, because it kind of, these episodes do their job. But at the same time, it's not exactly a fun-fueled romp in the same way. I mean, we've just watched the Daleks. You know, it just doesn't even bear comparison.
No.
It doesn't even bear comparison. I think a fair mark...
Here we go.
I think a fair mark for these two, and only because they do their job. They do their job of setting up the relationship between the Doctor and Vicky. I'm going to give this 1.6.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Because, did I give The Edge of Destruction? I think it was 0.8. I gave it 0.8 because it made absolutely no sense. It led me off in lots of different directions, and it really disappointed me.
Mm-hmm.
This didn't really disappoint me. I wasn't expecting anything. I knew from the start it was two episodes of fluff introducing a new character. And that's pretty much what it did.
Sure.
So I didn't feel sort of like my heart had been destroyed like I did at The Edge of Destruction. Which is why, like, I'm going to mark it up a little bit. I'm going to take it for what it is, but I'm also not going to give it the sort of marks that proper stories get. So it's 1.6.
Nice.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert, I'm giving this a higher mark than you are.
Good for you.
Yeah, not by much though. So it I agree, this isn't a proper story. It's just exposition. It's just so that we get to know the new companion.
Yeah.
And there are... Let's start with something positive first. Let's lead into this with a smile. There are a few examples of really nice production value. I love the Kykillian suit. I love the miniature of the spaceship with a rotating radar dish.
Yeah.
I love the fact that there is a spaceship. Even though, by the way, the windows, no glass. Like, they might as well have
crashed.
Like,
it has crashed.
That's true, but they might as well have hung, like, flowery... doesn't matter. God. Oh, I'm so pissed off with this episode, to be honest. All right. That being said, it's so banal. It's so ridiculously linear, so straightforward, so stupid.
I think stupid's harsh. It's not stupid.
No, I think it's... I think that is...
I don't think it is stupid in the sense of it makes no sense. It does make sense.
Oh, really? Yeah. It tried to...
Shoelaces analogy, dude.
I'm sorry, but... Okay, fine. Wait, dude. I think it is stupid. Because, like, the whole way that they motivate Bennett's crime here against Vicky, I mean, not the crime, whatever crime it was that he committed on the spaceship, is ridiculous. It's ludicrous. No one would do this. Now, I can't remember what the film is called, but the whole idea, like, the whole, like, oh, I'm a murderer, so I'm now going to pretend to be someone else in order to, like, kill other people and then blame my previous murder on them. I've seen that before. I can't remember what the film is called, but it's a film with Ron Silver. And it's set in, like, a pod. I think it might be called Space Pod or something.
All right.
Okay, whatever. Here's the negative thing that really does it for me, and that is, if this is exposition, it can, I think, clearly be compared to An Unearthly Child. We've got a new companion who doesn't at all get the kind of introduction that Susie got in An Unearthly Child. We have sort of the
end... I was going to say, Unearthly Child's dramatic.
Yeah, it is.
It's dramatic.
We have like the start of a new era in Doctor Who, and that the grandchild is gone. We've got a new companion. They're off on completely new adventures. In a way, it's like... It's not a reboot, obviously, but it's in a way, it's a reimagining of the core dynamics that made up the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. But instead of starting off with a proper serial, they give her this two-episode shit serial in which she does nothing but show her pants. Which, by the way, earns a few extra points.
So
overall, I'm giving this 1.7.
Is that a whole big spiel about I'm giving this a higher mark than you? 0.1.
Giving this 1.7 because I never want to see it again.
Yeah, well, it's done. It's done.
We've done it.
It's done. I'm pleased it's done.
Yeah. We have a few listener reviews as well.
Yep.
Surprise, surprise.
I can't believe it.
If you are neither one of the three people whose reviews we are about to read out, I dare you to guess who these three people are.
Gina says, really don't have much to say about the rescue other than the edge of Discrucken at least was entertaining. I can't wait to hear you guys tear this story apart. I was bored through the first episode and fell asleep during the second. I did appreciate the Doctor forgetting Susan was gone and appearing fairly melancholy, which I felt William Hartnell acted beautifully. I also did like that they landed on a planet the Doctor had been to before and had actual knowledge of. I figured out pretty early on that Bennett was Caecilium, which was very unsatisfying.
However, she goes on, however, I did find Bennett's abusive treatment of Vicky hilarious because it reminded me of Season 1 Doctor. Vicky is not much better than Susan. Naive, young, and easily distressed. Not sure if you guys noticed the look the Doctor gave Vicky after being reunited with Barb. It's quick, and only for a second, but he looks like he wants to kill her. The ending with the ghosts or people was just plain lazy writing. Overall, I would give this a 0.5, because this is the first time the Doctor changes his approach and willingly invites someone to travel instead of his go-to method of kidnapping. Love you guys! 2 exclamation points! Oh my god, Gina.
I give you 3 S.
I love you too. Thank you so much for sending in your review, Gina.
0.5.
Harsh. That is pretty harsh. That's pretty harsh. But you know what? I think she's on the money. People who are not Gina, you need to look up Gina on Twitter. She is at GinaGuerrero1.
And an extremely committed Doctor Who fan.
God, shit, like, yes.
Bloody hell.
God.
Hats off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Numero dos is actually not first-time contributor.
Well, the first time he's contributed a mini-review after having fully seen everything. Yeah. That's right. It's the Davis principle.
Yes, it is.
Davis says, hey, look at me doing a full review for once. I absolutely loved episode 1. The pit alien was done amazingly, along with Caecilian's costume. And the literal cliffhanger in episode 1 was so good. Loved the suspense. Also enjoyed Ian calling Caecilian cocky around the 7-minute mark of episode 2, which you picked up on.
Yes, I did. Nice one, Davis. Davis goes on, unfortunately, the story fell apart quickly into episode 2. The writers decided to diverge into a 2-minute scene of Barbara killing Vicky's pet, then lots of crying, then the pet is never mentioned again. Also, Vicky gets really annoying really fast. And she stays with them? That was an awful idea. At least we got to see Bennett pull a Ferris Bueller with his "you can't come in" tape recording. Nice one.
All in all, I rate this story a solid 3.0, being so high because it started out so wonderfully. Too bad about episode 2. Oh well.
Nice one, Davis.
Well,
I'm glad that he gave it a higher mark than we did, by the way.
Yeah, well, like, obviously it did have redeeming
it
features.
It does, yeah. We might be unnecessarily harsh, but Davis, right on the money. Nice one.
Absolutely. And like, I couldn't agree more with really annoying really quickly.
Oh my god,
that
so annoying
voice. It's the shrillness of
yeah
that
but
voice.
just keep your mind on the upskirt shot.
Bores into your brain.
People who are not Davis, you need to look up Davis on Twitter. He is at shrub the in one word. And we have a third one, a third mini review. This one comes from JD, John David. Hey John, how you doing?
Do you want to start?
Shall I start?
Yeah, why not?
JD goes, in what has to be the best episode so far, the TARDIS crew land in Dalek-invaded Oh, crap. This episode was so bad it made me hallucinate. It was last week again. Anyway, the TARDIS crew land on a planet. There is a murder mystery with only one suspect, and Susan returns in the form of Vicky, making you wonder why they got rid of Susan in the first place.
The good. Slim pickings here. Barbara, now in the throes of bloodlust from Dalek killing last week, kills a hand puppet, and Vicky whinges. Barbara's reaction to being called 500 years old. As a guy approaching my 40th birthday, I can relate to her face at this point.
He goes on, Ian, who has been quiet in the last few episodes, makes me laugh out loud with the cocky licking scene.
the bad. Cocky licking is the worst villain so far. Even worse than the Sensorites.
The Didonians have the worst death traps ever. Yeah. Ian managed to climb around one, plus they were going to push him into a pit with a sand beast, which we are told are herbivores. So what were they going to do? Lick him to death?
Vicky is so obviously there just to be Susan, futuristic child, woman, thing with a past. This was Maureen O'Brien's very first acting role, and sometimes it really shows. But she's a scouser like me, so I'll give her a slight break for that. And then the ghost arrived and solved the plot.
I'm going to make myself feel better by watching Edge of Destruction. Score 1.7.
Good mark.
Spot on, dude!
You see, I find, so, with everything in the 60s, Maisha's a really interesting point there. Everything in the 60s, everybody had to speak with a certain voice, right?
Yeah.
So everybody, like, all of these actors, not all of them, but a lot of them had regional accents.
Mm.
And it's quite fun when you're listening to them try and do a posh English accent to try and work out where they're from. I still haven't looked it up. Where was Susan from? Is she Welsh?
I have no idea. Well, being a foreigner in this land, I find that very difficult.
Yeah,
I
guess it would be quite hard to pick up on. Yeah. But yeah, Scouse trying to do posh. Brilliant. It's a brilliant twist.
JD, thank you for another fantastic review. People who are not JD, look him up on Twitter. He is at Marius Kane. That's Kane with a K. Okie dokie.
Well, let's wrap this one up in a neat little bow.
Yeah, shall we? We're returning next week with a review of The Romans.
Oh, a historical. Wonderful.
Historical, yeah. Well,
the last historical was great.
You studied Latin, didn't you?
No.
I studied Latin. I'm looking forward to this historical.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I studied The Romans.
Well, there you go. Yeah, you did history. Oh, brilliant.
Ancient and modern history, don't you know?
Literally everyone on the planet currently tuning in, please do submit your mini reviews, tweet your thoughts at us. Speaking of Twitter, I'm at Ponkin.
And I'm at One Too Many Mornings.
Yes, you are. Thanks for listening. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/whobackwhen. Go to the website. Lots of screenshots and thingamajigs and fantastic mini reviews from listeners and feedback and all kinds of stuff. Goodies, yeah. Right? Wonderful.
Everything you could want in one place. It's an emporium of food. For the first 11 episodes.
So, yeah, thanks very much. See you in the next episode. Shamalama ding dong.
Catch you on the flap side.
Ciao, ciao.
Back when.